We're continuing the lamentations of the morning, the kinot of the morning. I'm going to skip forward to the 10th kina. And the 10th kina describes the different watchings of the Kohanim. In the days of David and Shmuel, it says in Chronicles in Divrei Hayamim that David and Shmuel established 24 rotations of the families. There were 24 families which had a rotation of serving in the temple. And the names of the watches in the first temple are described in Chronicles. And the Kina goes through the names of the different watchings of the second temple and how each one had to contend with the destruction. So he's actually describing another classical scene of the destruction. Our sages say that when the Romans entered the temple, the Kohanim ignored the destruction that was coming. There was perfect silence as the Kohanim rushed to do their jobs in tremendous dedication to the service of Hashem, ignoring completely the fact that Roman soldiers were charging into the temple. They were silently going about their work. As Roman soldiers were yelling and charging in, they saw this sign of pristine holiness, and they're killing Kohanim right and left, and the Kohanim continue doing their work as though nothing's happening. Right. To the point where, at one point, the Kohanim ran into an upper chamber, and the Romans put it on fire, and the Kohanim said, Rabboni Shel Olam, you charged us with the keys to the temple. We couldn't be faithful servants. We couldn't hold on to the keys. They're yours. And they took the keys to the temple and tossed them to heaven. And the Midrash says a heavenly hand came out and grabbed the keys, as though Hashem says, I got them. And then they jumped into the fire and they all died. Now, did a hand come out or not come out? Is it to be taken literally or not? That's not the point. The Kina is going to focus on the Kohanim and their reaction as the temple is destroyed and their destruction with the temple. Yes?
Do we consider that they did the absolute right thing by not, say, fighting back against the Romans?
Not necessarily. Oh, right. There were certain foolish things that happened. Some things were pious, some things were foolish, and we don't always know how to draw the line. Meaning, there were people who were foolish, and when they fought wars, they'd stop for Shabbos. And then they'd lose and die. And they'd say, in the honor of Shabbos, we won't die. But that's not the halacha. The halacha says you fight even on Shabbos. Shammai would preach this all around. You fight even on Shabbos. Adri deta afiru b'Shabbat. Shammai taught, don't stop fighting just because it's Shabbos. We honor Shabbos, but you have to protect your life and fight on Shabbos. So some things, but here our sages saw it as an act of piety. Here our sages, for whatever reason, didn't say it was foolish. They said it was pious. I don't know why, but whatever. That's not the point right now. Let's go into the Kina. I don't know. It's a good question. Why didn't they fight back? Okay. The Kina speaks about the rose, Chavatzelet HaSharon, the rose of the Sharon. And that's a reference to the temple, which is called Chavatzelet, the rose. The Medrash says that Chavatzelet is really two words. Chavatzelet could mean the rose among the thorns, like Israel's among the nations. And Chavatzelet can also mean, the Medrash says, a contraction of two words, Chavuya v'tzel, sheltered in the shadow of Hashem. How has it come to be that the rose of Sharon sits alone and there is no more joy from the mouths of those who carried the ark, the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron? They were removed from their watches as the temple was given over to the rebels of Maron. Okay, Maron is one of the 24 watches of the temple. So our sages tell us that when the temples... The town of Maron was up a mountain. And you couldn't approach Maron except for on a very thin path, the Talmud tells us. And the first watch that was responsible for the temple was called Yehoyariv, and they lived in Maron. And our sages say that they had the ill fortune that they were the ones serving in the temple when the temple was destroyed. And so our sages say their name alludes to the destruction. Yeho, Yariv, Hashem will fight. Hashem, so to speak, is fighting his children over their rebelliousness. So Yeho is Hashem's, the letters of Hashem's name. Yeho Yariv was the father of that watch. The watch, the first watch, who were charged with the temple during that time, the time of the destruction. We then go on to speak about another Kohen, and this is another recurring theme in Kinos, and that is the story of the prophet Zechariah. Our sages say Zechariah was the Kohen Gadol, and he was also a prophet. And let's take out Chronicles. We'll read the story. You guys have to know the story. Very important story of the Navi Zechariah. So we're opening to Chronicles. We're opening to Divrei Yamim. Okay. So our story begins with wait a second. Give me a second. Oh, not finding it. Give me just a second. Slicha. Here we go. Okay. Here we go. Okay. Our story begins with Atalia. Atalia, we're on, in these versions, page 1008. Okay? Divrei Hayamim Beis, Chronicle B, chapter 22. Atalia was the mother of the king of Judea. And when she saw her son Ahaziah died, so she gathered all the descendants of David HaMelech and murdered them all. And she took the throne. And there was a daughter, Yehoshavat, and she took Yoash, and she grabbed him. He was a little kid, and she hit him. And she saved his life. And they hid him. There was a room above the Holy of Holies, and they hid him there for 6 years. And Yehoyada, the high priest, kept him alive together with his sister. And then, in the 7th year, Yehoyada, the high priest, gathered with him the soldiers and the generals, and they had enough strength that they declared that he was king. And when they anointed him king, Ataliah came in, and they captured her, and they executed her, and he became king. So, Yehoyada established him as king. And um, when he establishes him as king, he makes him promise he will be dedicated to Hashem, and then they destroy the house of worship for the Baal, and they reestablish the temple the way things should be. Everything's going great. Joash is the youngest king. He's 7 years old, and he's king for 40 years. 7 years old.
7 years old.
But that's why the high priest was running the show. Yoyada was running the show. And that's he was able to bring everyone in tshuva, and everything was going beautifully. Joash fixes up the temple, and he does a lot of wonderful things with his mentor, Yoyada. And things are going well. Okay, so far they've built up the temple. Yoyada passes away at the ripe old age of 130 years old. And after Yoyada dies, so people come to the king Joash and they tell him, you lived in the Holy of Holies for 6 years. You should be a god. So they start worshiping idols and they appoint Joash, who was so faithful, as a god. And prophets come and they warn them. And then Yoyada's son, on Yom Kippur, he is Kohen Gadol, on Yom Kippur, and he is a prophet. And he stands there giving a speech. And he says, so says Hashem. Why are you transgressing his mitzvot? You won't succeed. What are you leaving Hashem for? And so they stone him to death. Joash says, kill him. And they listen. And they murder in the temple on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, who is also the Navi, whose father saved the life of the king. And Joash is now an old man, and he ignores the fact that Zechariah's father, Yoyada, saved his life and established him on the throne. He ignores all of that and murders in cold blood Zechariah. And this is the beginning of the story of the destruction of the temple. In many ways, this was a turning point. This shaked the heavens. And our sages say that we read in Lamentations, Im tochalna nashim piryam olelei tipuchim. How can it be that women are eating their own children, that they measured them tefach by tefach? You guys remember the story of Doeg ben Yosef. The end of the verse says, how can it be that a Kohen Gadol is murdered as a prophet in the temple? Our sages say it's a conversation. The Jewish people are turning to Hashem and saying, how could you let such a thing happen? Women, merciful women, are eating their children? And Hashem says back to them, and how could you let such a thing happen? The Kohen Gadol, who is a prophet, is murdered in the temple? So this murder of Zechariah was a turning point, and it was an answer to our claim. Just a second. Our sages say that the blood of Zechariah didn't go away. That for the next decades, there was a spot in the temple where blood was bubbling. And even though the temple had much blood because they sacrificed animals, and even though the temple was washed down, they had a stream going through the temple, and whenever they had to wash down the temple, they'd close the dam, and all the water would flood the temple. It was a stone floor. And then they'd wash away all the blood. As much as they washed it away, Zechariah's blood, the place he was murdered, stayed put, wouldn't leave, and stayed bubbling. And this is going to be a recurring theme in the Kinos, because what's going to happen is that when the chief general Nebuzaradan walks into the temple, he sees the blood bubbling on the floor. And he says, what's this? And the Kohanim say, oh, we just slaughtered a goat here. And Nebuzaradan says, that's interesting. Bring me a goat. They bring him a goat. He slaughters the goat. Now, when you slaughter an animal, the blood is very hot initially. And the blood bubbles. The blood really does bubble. When the blood comes out of the animal, it hits the floor, steam is rising from the blood, and it bubbles. So he slaughters a goat next to Zechariah's blood, and the color doesn't match. So he says, what is it? They say, maybe it's a cow. So he says, bring me a cow. He slaughters a cow. And he said, the blood doesn't match. He says, what's going on? They say, maybe it's a sheep. They bring in a sheep. They slaughter a sheep. He says, no, 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 no. What's going on here? What blood is this that doesn't stop bubbling? And finally, someone tells him. And he says, I will avenge his death. And he pulls out his sword and he starts killing. And he kills the elders. And he kills the leaders. And he kills the men. And he kills women, the Vuzaradin. He was the chief executioner. And then he comes back to the blood and he says, I killed the most chosen. You want me to kill them all? And then the blood comes down. So that medrash, that story of Nebuzaradan and the number of people that were killed is going to be a recurring theme in the kinos, and we're about to encounter it in this kina. Yes, guys, had a lot of questions. Daniel. True. That's true, but I guess there was still a breaking point, so to speak. I don't remember. I think yes. I think the Talmud says yes. Yes.
What does it mean that the blood was boiling?
The literal translation is that just like when water boils, you constantly see bubbles on the water. So through that blood, you'd constantly see bubbles coming out of that blood. That's the medrash, I'm saying. It's as though it's constantly bubbling, right? Yes, Erev Tov Amir.
Two brief questions. First is, in Eicha, this is talking about mothers eating their own children. And is it mamash the pshat? Or there's also, because when I was reading this thing, this only the pshat? But can it be like the temple as a mother and burning and eating, like the Jerusalem as a mother, or we're talking about mamash the pshat?
There's no
drash.
You see from the psukim in Melachim that it was literal. No. It's literal. Unfortunately, it's literal. And Josephus also says it happened in the destruction of the Second Temple. I'm saying Josephus was talking literally also. And Josephus speaks very clearly about that happening.
Okay, second question is, what was the point of the Babylonians? I mean, because they released Yirmiyahu, right? And in a way, see, that by they would release an Avi and kill others, what was the purpose? And send some to act, of course, like there's a Sokhmin for Kodesh Baruch Hu, there's a plan, but the Babylonians, if you're looking at the Babylonians, what was the purpose? What was their goal? It's not to kill the Jewish people, it's to conquer the Jewish land, but to release the prophets.
Seems clear that their goal was to conquer and not destroy.
So what's the relationship?
You see, they gave us many chances. Hashem summoned them to destroy, but the Babylonians wanted to conquer us. Their purpose was not to destroy us. Later on, they had other reasons. They viewed us as a threat later on, but when they destroyed the temple, it was for lack of choice. We kept rebelling. The Romans also, they weren't interested in destroying us. That's why the rabbis said, don't rebel.
The Babylonians, they just conquered, and they gave the king another name.
Right.
And they wanted just
to collect taxes. Right?
That's all.
Right. The Babylonians, you see clearly, because they gave us so many chances. And every time we rebelled, we took advantage of those chances. But the Romans as well.
Yeah.
They were not interested in destroying the temple. And that's why the rabbis kept saying, stop fighting them. So now that we know the story of Zechariah, we understand the next stanza in the Kina. That the people who have the five books, we have the... embellished, so to speak, with the five books, we weep and weep as the Kohen, who was a priest, was killed on Yom Kippur, and over his blood, blossoming children were butchered like goats. Now we understand what he's talking about. And the Kohanim of Sephoris, Kone Tziporim, the Kohanim that come from the word Tziporim, they were exiled like Tziporim, like birds. Our sages say the city of Tzipore, which is, what's the real name of the city of Tzipore? Kitron. It's called Tzipori. It's given that nickname because it sits up high like a bird, like a tzipor. And that's where the second watch of Kohanim lived. They were called Yedaya. And our sages say that also alludes to the destruction. Yedaya means Hashem knew. Yada knew ka, Hashem. Hashem knew that deep down in their hearts they were not faithful to Him. And that's why they were exiled like birds. So we got a taste of this piyut. There's another recurring theme of the piyutim, and that is what the Navi and Isaiah speaks about how we were going through Bayar Ba'arav Talinu Orechot Didanim. As you went through the forest, Arabia, next to the Arabs, you thought you'd get a break, you thought you'd get respite, you'd get a rest. Our sages say when we were exiled in the period of the First Temple, we said to our captors, take us by the Arabs. They're our cousins. They'll help us out. And so we were hungry and thirsty and naked in shackles. And the Arabs, they had flasks that had old stagnant air in them. And when we were walking in exile, they colored the flasks so it would look as though the flasks had liquid in them. And they gave us a lot of salty food. And we said, we're thirsty. And they said, here, we have the flasks. In a second, we'll give you good wine to drink. So the people who were so thirsty were given a lot of salty food. And then they gave them the flasks. And people would rip open the opening of the flask and suck in that old rancid air and drop dead. And this and people were dropping like flies when they realized that not only were the Arabs not going to quench their thirst, on the contrary, they had tricked them into becoming even more thirsty, and they caused more deaths. And so that's another recurring theme of how in the exile, the people who should have been on our side, they turned against us as well. And that's in this kina that's mentioned, our enemies would ridicule us. And we fought, we begged for bread, and that's because we ceased to give bread to the poor. And so we found ourselves hungry and thirsty without water or bread as the two loaves of bread ceased to be served by Beit Lechem. The fifth watch was a family of Malkiah. They lived in Beit Lechem. Now, Beit Lechem literally means the house of bread. Beit Lechem should have been the capital of kindness. But the showbread was also called Lechem. Okay, so that's... that what? So our sages say that the blessing of bread stemmed from the bread that we brought in the temple. And they stopped to bring it, so there stopped to be bread for the Jewish people. That's the correlation they're making with Beit Lechem. Right. And that's and the song is showing how we stopped bringing the showbread. And it evolved to the point where we actually died of hunger and thirst.